Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Financial woes, waning interest, even strikes. It's been a turbulent time for American orchestras, but don't count them all out just yet. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, some orchestras have gone back to the drawing board and found new formulas for success. Plus, jazz pianist and Cuban native Omar Sosa joins us to play live in the studio some selections from his newest album and our picks of the week. But first, the Philadelphia Orchestra, whom you're hearing in the background, recently filed for bankruptcy, just the latest in a long series of bad news headlines about American orchestras. In the past few months alone, regional ensembles in Honolulu and Syracuse have folded, and as we covered on the show, the Detroit Symphony Orchestra recently concluded a brutal six-month strike. But now that you're sufficiently depressed, let's take a look at what's actually going right in the orchestral world. Joining me first to discuss a few bright notes within a bleak time is Washington Post classical music critic Anne Majette. Anne, welcome back.
Thanks, John.
So give us some good news. Who's an example of an orchestra that's kind of recasting itself, breaking the mold?
Well, right in the middle of all the gloom and doom this spring, the Orchestra of St. Luke's opened a new facility in New York City, which is a much-needed rehearsal and practice space for the freelance community of New York. And the Orchestra of St. Luke's does represent a completely different model from most orchestras in that it's a freelance group of musicians who have been working together, who do work together regularly. And when I compare that to a year-round orchestra, people usually squeal and say, you can't compare it. It's a whole different animal. But the fact is it plays a similar repertory, and it's found a way to do something kind of new and exciting with that repertory. Do I think it's a model for all American orchestras? Not necessarily.
Well, that was, in fact, my next question. Is that a model for the rest of them? Orchestra of St. Luke's taking advantage, perhaps, of what could be seen as a disadvantage. It's a freelance orchestra as opposed to, you know, kind of a regular New York Philharmonic, Philadelphia Orchestra type thing, and turning it to their advantage through the use of this new space, which, as you say, will have practice rooms. There is a small and a large performing space within it, a place for visiting musicians to sort of relax between performances, change before their gigs, that sort of thing. Is that what the place?
Absolutely. And that place recognizes the actual need of musicians as opposed to the desired need. That is to say, we're seeing lots and lots of big performing arts centers built all over the country to house the traditional model of an orchestra. But some of these bankruptcies are showing that those traditional models are not as financially viable in today's climate as something different. And the Orchestra of St. Luke's, which probably is not as financially secure as it would like to be. I think every nonprofit organization is struggling in this climate. Mm-hmm. But they did raise the money to open the new facility.
The Demena Center, as it's known.
Absolutely.
And so it was the Orchestra of St. Luke's who did the fundraising for this?
I'm not 100% sure on that.
Let me
get back to you.
All right. We're speaking with Anne Majette, the classical music critic of the Washington Post. Let's hear the orchestra in action. We'll go back a few years for this 2003 recording with pianist John Browning and the Mozart Piano Concerto in A major. Thank you. That is the freelance group known as the Orchestra of St. Luke's, a freelance group but one that has been on the scene here in New York for many years. They recorded this Mozart piano concerto in A major, Kerschel 48, back in 2003 with John Browning at the piano. And speaking with Anne Majette, the classical music critic of the Washington Post, and if it sounded like a little Keystone Cop routine there, Anne, when I asked you who actually came up with the money for this and neither one of us was sure, there's actually a very good explanation for why neither one of us was sure. Let me read you this from the control room where they did some quick research. With traditional funding harder to obtain, the Orchestra of St. Luke's became one of a growing number of nonprofits turning to a federal tax program for capital financing. This week it will announce it has received $4.6 million equity infusion from financial institutions including Goldman Sachs Group Inc.'s Urban Investment Group, Solomon Hess, and United Fund Advisors through a federal program that provides tax credits to investors putting money into community development projects. I think I'm going to take a nap now.
I think that's a great development right there.
Really?
That's
what I just said? Because I don't.
Well, I heard the term federal. And the term federal combined with arts funding is something that makes everybody's heart glad in our world.
Yeah. Well, not everybody. Certainly everybody in the arts world.
I would point out from that example, just incidentally, that when people are talking about troubles with orchestras, people often see this as an assault on the music. Mm-hmm. And as that recording shows, the music is in great shape. The question is how to find ways to keep performing that music. But nobody is suggesting that the field is about to die because a few orchestras are going bankrupt.
All right. Now, there are orchestras that have, in fact, filed for bankruptcy. I mentioned the Philadelphia Orchestra before. The Brooklyn Philharmonic has gone through a bit of a rough patch here in New York and is now in the process of reinventing itself with a new music director. And he is here with me in the Soundcheck studio. Alan Pearson has been on the New York scene for a number of years with the Chamber Orchestra, known as Alarm Will Sound, and now the new artistic director of the Brooklyn Phil. Alan, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, John.
So, I mean, money troubles certainly forced the Brooklyn Phil's hand in terms of it had to do something. You were brought on board to figure out what. So what has the orchestra's response? What is the current response to the situation?
Right. Well, the idea... So, after there was a period when there was when things sort of stopped happening orchestrally in the Brooklyn Philharmonic. And at that point, the board took a very hard look at the situation. They downsized a great deal. The staff is much smaller now than it was, enormously smaller now than it was at the Brooklyn Phil's peak. The board is now smaller. And, they came up with a very intense group of leaders, both on the board and on the staff of the orchestra, and began this process of asking, what do we want to do? And what does Brooklyn need? And I think that was a very smart way to start. Rather than beginning from the assumption that, of course, every city or every town or every community needs an orchestra, so we are that. But rather beginning with a question, which is, what does this community need? And they brought me on when they were having that conversation. And, independently, a lot of us came to basically the same conclusion, which was that Brooklyn has an incredible cultural, artistic energy about it. There is just so much happening artistically in the community already, and that the orchestra can be there as a kind of nexus point. There's an incredible opportunity for an orchestra to be the force that brings all these different organizations and all these different cultures together and becomes a unifying kind of conduit where all that can happen and can mix with the incredible symphonic repertory, which is what we represent, and create something that is new and invigorating and that represents the community and that speaks to the community.
Well, when we say the community, I mean, Brooklyn, as you know, is a series of many communities, many of them very different traditions, different musical ideas and stuff. So, does the Brooklyn Phil have to become like this shape-shifting thing that, can be one thing on Sunday in Bed-Stuy and another thing on Wednesday in Red Hook, et cetera?
Right, absolutely. And I think part of the challenge, and it's an interesting challenge, is how to do that but also have a core identity that is consistent and that is well-defined. And I think this is something that, I've dealt with and struggled with in, a really creative, great way with Alarm Will Sound, which also, part of you know, when Alarm Will Sound was formed, you know, people asked, and we ourselves asked, well, do we want to be like a modernist group? Do we want to be a minimalist group? Do we want to be a group that takes on pop music? And we said, no, we want to do all those things. And so the challenge with Alarm Will Sound also was how to be a polymath and how to make that eclecticism be part of your identity. And you're absolutely right. I mean, part of what is really exciting and also really challenging about the job is the number of different communities that we're dealing mm-hmm. with, and the number, you know, even right now at the stage we're in now of planning our relaunch season, which is what I'm you know, head deep in at the moment, and figuring out what we're going to do. A lot of that, it's not just me sitting in my office, like, you know, brainstorming programs. It's going out to all these different communities and meeting with community leaders and various organizations there and figuring out what makes sense. And the difference between, you know, I mean, going from a meeting in Bed-Stuy to going to a meeting in Brighton Beach, I mean, it's extraordinary. It feels like you're going into really different worlds.
Right. And it's all Brooklyn. The Brooklyn Philharmonic's new artistic director, Alan Pearson, here with me in the studio. Anne Majette with us from the studios of The Washington Post, where she's the classical music critic. And Anne, I mean, Alan, you know, mentions the idea of coming up with programming that needs to fit all these different communities. I mean, that is kind of one of the things that everybody is wrestling with, right? I mean, you know, you look at orchestras that are in trouble. What's the – is the tendency to go back to the safe, the tried and true, when you see red in the bottom line?
There are as many tendencies as there are orchestras, I think. And I think what Alan describes as the challenge is the challenge that every orchestra is realizing right now of, my goodness, there are a lot of communities out there and the traditional audience is not so much there. What is the audience we're looking for now and what do we want to be? And I think some orchestras tend to play a lot of Beethoven and others go in much funkier directions.
So let's hear a couple of examples. I mean, Baltimore, the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra with their conductor, Maren Alsop, she made a kind of a big splash there in Baltimore when she joined as music director, right?
She absolutely did. And the Baltimore Symphony has been doing an exemplary job of precisely going into the community, trying to reach the community with programming and with programs, teaching elementary school kids violin, putting instruments mm-hmm. in the hands of a bunch of inner city elementary schoolers. You know, whether that is the key to financial success has yet to be proven, but it's certainly the key to not going under. Baltimore being a city without a lot of big industry that can support an institution like an orchestra easily. It takes a lot of work every year to balance that budget.
So Maren Alsop and the board and the orchestra musicians there in Baltimore finding a way to keep contemporary music, 20th century music in this case, from Leonard Bernstein going. This is an excerpt from Mass from 2009.
Glory to God in the highest, and peace on earth to men of goodwill.
Gloria in excelsis Deo, et cetera, pax omnibus, bene voluntatis. Adoramus Dei, benedicimus et glorificamus Dei. Gratias agimus tibi pro tempo, non gloria tua. Domine Deus, rational estes, Deus, pater, omnibus, Domine Deus.
Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, Maren Alsop conducting a little bit of Leonard Bernstein's Mass from their 2009 recording. Now, Magnus Lindberg has been composer in residence here in New York with the New York Philharmonic, and they performed his piece Kraft last fall. Magnus Lindberg's piece Kraft. Director Alan Gilbert of the New York Philharmonic has made Magnus Lindberg an important part of his Contact series, a kind of sub-series of orchestral programs that revolve around contemporary music, much of it being heard for the first time. So that's something the New York Philharmonic is going through. But Anne, you know, is that something that you can bring to the Columbus Symphony Orchestra in Northern Ohio, for example, and expect to do well with?
Well, it really depends on what kind of audience Columbus is built up. I mean, that comparison between Mass and Kraft is a really interesting one, because those are both examples of an orchestra actually responding to its community in different ways. Mass was something that Alsop does very well, but it also involved a high school band. They brought it to Carnegie Hall. They took it up to Harlem and did it with school kids there somehow. And that played very much to their strengths, where Kraft is Alan Gilbert's vision of trying to change the Philharmonic into a more contemporary place that reflects some of the currents of contemporary music. And that was a piece that appealed strongly to composers and new music people around the country and put the Philharmonic on the map for them. So it represents two different ways of getting away from the Beethoven model in a way.
Alan Pearson is the new artistic director of the Brooklyn Philharmonic and the longtime director of Alarm Will Sound. With Alarm Will Sound, Alan, we would have not batted an eyelid to eyelash, whatever it is that you bat, you know, to hear you doing the music of Magnus Lindberg. Is that the kind of thing that the new Brooklyn Phil will be looking to do?
Right, probably not. I mean, Anna's saying, you know, this is, you know, both of these examples that you're pointing out are orchestras in different ways reaching out to their communities, or what they feel and see as being their communities. And Brooklyn's doing the same thing. And, you know, there is no one way to solve these issues we're talking about, and the ways that we find are going to reflect the communities we're living in. And, you know, I love Magnus Lindberg, but I don't see programming Magnus Lindberg on a Brooklyn Philharmonic concert anytime soon.
But your community in Brooklyn, I mean, there's a huge indie rock community, very vibrant, at times very experimental. Will you be sort of extending the orchestra's tentacles into that community?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, the orchestra's tentacles are already a little bit there. I mean, we have this program that started before I had anything to do with the Philharmonic, called the Composer Mentorship Program, which Randy Wolf, who's a great composer, has been running. And it's a fantastic program, and I can say that because I had nothing to do with starting it. But it's a program that the whole aim of it is to get people from the Brooklyn community, or from the Brooklyn communities, who are great musical creators but who aren't from the orchestral world and maybe don't know how to write for orchestra, and teach them the skills of doing that. And so that, you know, these people end up first working for string quartet and then for chamber orchestra, learning how to write for orchestra. So this year we've had Corey Dargle, who's a terrific Brooklyn-based singer-songwriter. We've had Matt Mellon, who is from an indie band called Skeletons, which is based in Brooklyn. And we've had Jeremiah Lockwood, who has his own band, The Sway Machinery. And so these guys have been writing pieces for the Brooklyn Phil. And so that's the beginning of this. I mean, there is a, you know, I'm looking to draw from, you know, what are all the artistic and cultural resources of Brooklyn. And that indie band scene is definitely one of them. And you will see that on our concerts going forward.
And Alan's old band, which he still leads, Alarm Will Sound, really kind of suggested a new model for what the orchestra could look and sound like in the 21st century. Is part of the problem that a lot of orchestras have been stuck in the late 19th, early 20th century, you know, where it got bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, as opposed to Alarm Will Sound, which has scaled back and is amplified and has a slightly different, totally perhaps different sound?
I mean, I think part of the problem is just clinging to a status quo. I think size doesn't have to be the issue if you're attracting a community that feels you're a vibrant part of their musical lives. Alan mentioning the indie rock connection is pithy, because it seems to me that indie rock and classical music have been a very fruitful intersection with a lot of the new groups we're seeing. But I think with a traditional orchestra, there's nothing that holds it per se back from being relevant, except that the repertory that it and its patrons tend to favor is the same thing over and over. And that's not a great way to win new audiences, who do love that music, incidentally. I'm not suggesting we throw out that music, but you need a little more than that to get people really excited. Witness Esa-Pekka Salonen in Los Angeles, who did get people kind of jazzed for a fairly contemporary program.
And you know, it seems like the concerts that do attract a lot of press and then a lot of attention from the community are presented not as concerts with a capital C, but as events, as something that's, I mean, Alan, you're shaking your head, so I mean.
Yeah, I mean, that's been my mantra for, you know, 10 years. And one of the things that, you know, Alarm Will Sound, when we were founding Alarm Will Sound, talked about was we want our concerts to be events. And, you know, there was a kind of, I feel like this is happily on the decline, a kind of, you know, generic, you know, new music model program. And it was sort of the new music concert version of the traditional, you know, contemporary
overture concerto, symphony, right.
And, you know, and for the new music ensemble, it was like, you know, four unrelated 15-minute long pieces with an intermission in the middle, and that was your concert. And, you know, we said from the beginning that we wanted to find ways to put concerts together that were events. And I remember Danny Felsenfeld, one of the first reviews I ever got, you know, in New York City, wrote this review. I think it was on Dante.com. I think it was on Dante.
He used to write for them a lot, yeah.
Yeah, in 2001 when we did our first concert in New York, saying, you know, there are certain events that you see which make you, I forgot exactly how I said it, but basically that you will tell people you were there. It was a very over the top. It was incredibly over the top. But I mean, it got what we were trying to do, and that's, you know, that's the idea with the Brooklyn Phil too. And you can do that, I believe, and it's, you know, it may be a challenge to figure out how, you can do events that incorporate Beethoven and Brahms too.
Anne, are you familiar?
I was just going to add that the one drawback or the one feature of a concert as event is it's very hard to do with a 26-week season or a 28-week season, because it's hard to train people that they want an event every Thursday night or every Friday night.
Absolutely.
And the problem with the orchestral model as it exists now is it relies on these subscribers who you want to train to go back every week. And most of us in the under 50 demographic, I would say, are excited to embrace that event, but we maybe not need that more than once a month, and we may not want to do it every week.
Yeah, I think that's very smart and very true. And it's honestly, I mean, now being, you know, in the position of planning these events, it's not just an audience issue, it's a creator issue. I mean, I can't come up with, you know, if you're lucky in a good year, I can come up with maybe five or six really great event ideas. But I certainly can't come up with 26.
But you're going to hope that those five or six are the doorway, the entrance point, the entry point for people to get accustomed to the idea of, I go to museums, I go to galleries, I go to clubs, why don't I go to see the local orchestra?
That's right.
You know, whatever that orchestra may be.
Well, maybe the orchestra should do five or six concerts a year and not 26, you know?
That's another idea. And there are a few orchestras that do that. The Wordless Music Orchestra, for example, here in New York, comes together not for a concert season but for specific events. And will actually be doing so later this month when they play a work for orchestra by Radiohead guitarist Johnny Greenwood, whose music for orchestra you're hearing in the background now. I want to thank both of our guests, Anne Majette, classical music critic of The Washington Post, Alan Pearson, the new artistic director of the Brooklyn Philharmonic, and conductor of the recording you'll be hearing on Soundcheck tomorrow when Donica Dennehy and Dawn Upshaw join us for their new recording, which sounds great. Alan, thank you for being here, and great to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me, as always.
This is Soundcheck. A little bit of music from Radiohead's Johnny Greenwood, who's written a fair number of orchestral pieces lately. This one's called Popcorn Superhet Receiver. You may have heard this in the film score There Will Be Blood, that movie. I should mention Alan Pearson was part of a panel discussion last night in our green space. The panel was American Orchestras, Endangered Species, and was sponsored by our sister station, WQXR. You can find a link to that video on our page, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Up next, our picks of the week, and then later, a live performance from jazz pianist Omar Sosa. And satellite radio listeners, take note, if you listen to Soundcheck on XM or Sirius Satellite Radio, we are moving to a new channel, and all the details are on that Soundcheck page, wnyc.org/soundcheck.